modular, but pretty much everything I say should hold for more general fermionic topological order in 2 plus 1D and supermodular fusion categories. But if you have any specific questions, you can let me know later. So C, for the moment, is going to be some modular fusion category, and I'm about to tell you how I want you to think about that for the purposes of this talk. And when we zest, we're going to be picking some data, which, here goes, I'm going to abbreviate with this tuple, zeta. There's some choices of data that you input into this construction, and if it satisfies some conditions, you get out another topological order. Following a tip from Xiaogang Wen, we expect this to be connected pretty closely to the hierarchy construction we just heard about in the previous talk, so you might see some similarities, but we haven't made that fully precise yet, so I'm not going to discuss that specifically, but maybe in the back of all of our minds, there's some relationship there. And I'll at least tell you why I think this point of view is a nice one. Okay, so we're all interested in physics. So a lot of the times when we're working with topological order or, you know, fusion categorical symmetries, we're used to working with what I'll call skeletal fusion categories. So when we think about one of these fusion categories or maybe a modular fusion category, it's a bunch of numbers satisfying a bunch of conditions. So we have a fusion ring, we have our F symbols. We've seen that over and over again in all of these talks. And it comes with a wonderful graphical calculus on trivalent ribbon graphs. Those have been those pictures that we've seen. And we really need this for working with concrete examples. If you want to write down an explicit Hamiltonian or explicit matrices representing the quantum gates that you can get from your theory, if you want to, you know, make connections to experiment, we need this point of view. And it's very useful. But I'm going to use an orthogonal way of thinking about fusion and modular fusion categories in this talk today, which you can't do simultaneously, but I hope to convince you by the end of this talk is still a useful way of thinking about things if you're interested in proving physical theorems like I am. So these, instead of passing to a skeletal fusion category, what you do is you say, okay, I've got a topological order. Without loss of generality, I'm going to pass to one that is strict. So that's one where the associators are trivial. So I'm not saying that the F symbols are all one or zero. We can't talk about these two things at the same time. There are no F symbols. There are there's our category, and I'll show you in a minute. It also comes with a nice graphical calculus. I'm going to call these string diagrams. So we've been using that terminology, but I mean something slightly different than what we've been working with. And these are often helpful for studying families of topological orders instead of, you know, specific examples. The connection to topology is manifest, as we'll see in a moment, and proving theorems sometimes is easier from this point of view. But what they have in common, and in particular where their graphical calculi overlap, is in the center of this Venn diagram. So anything that's an invariant of your theory is going to look the same in either one of these points of view. So things like fusion rules, quantum dimensions, modular data, other topological invariants you might cook up, or things that are derived from such invariants, make the same sense from either point of view. So the things that you know and love, like in the last talk, we were, you know, often talking about our anions in terms of their associated invariants, and all of that's still well and good. I should mention, I'm not going to ever say the word unitary, but let's just assume that.
Is determinant S should be not zero?
Pardon?
Determinant S should be non-zero?
Thank you so much for catching that before we went any further. Appreciate that. Okay. So, how do I want you to think about topological order for this talk? We're going to be using string diagrams in a strict monoidal category. So this is just some general nonsense. Our morphisms are drawn as coupons. I'm going to be reading from the top down. We've got composition in the vertical direction, tensor product in the horizontal directions. These are compatible in a nice way. And our associators, which are a priori isomorphisms in a general fusion category, or more generally monoidal category, are trivial. So they're just equal to the identity morphisms. So those are our pictures for the associators. going back really briefly, I'm just flashing the definition. Don't even read it. Don't look at it. The way I want you to think about these things mathematically, so I can tell you about this testing construction, is that there are three layers of structure on our category. Monoidal or tensor structure, let's just call it fusion, abrading, and twists, right? When we model anions, we want to be able to fuse them. We want to be able to braid them. They have self-statistics, okay? And normally when we define these things, there are, you know, isomorphisms that are natural and they satisfy coherence axioms, pentagon, hexagon, and I've gotten tired, so I never write down the last ones. But these three layers of structure on top of a place where it makes sense to talk about a finite number of simple objects, finite dimensional Hom spaces, is where we're gonna live. Okay, so what do you actually need to know? Just pictures, in order for me to share the results I want to. So when I said that using these tools, this graphical calculus, the topology is manifest, what I mean is that all those coherence axioms I just flashed at you, they encode topological invariance of your string diagrams. So you have framed Rademeister 1, Rademeister 2, Rademeister 3, which means that if you start gluing up these pictures to get a picture of a framed, a diagram of a framed link or not, then you get an invariant associated to it, and that's what we call the Reshetic-Intrive invariant, where these are still interpretable as anion trajectories. So these are, just think of them as normal space-time pictures, but I don't have any trivalent vertices lying around in this formalism, and that's okay. And this isn't necessarily an exhaustive list, it's just this is what the axioms give you. Nice topological properties of your anions. Okay, and we'll see pictures like this throughout the talk. All right, so I need to tell you one more thing in order to start telling you about zesting, which is what it means for our topological order to have a grading. So this is something you see in symmetry and rich topological order, but we're not there yet. It's just going to be a way to organize the fusion rules of the anions using a group. This actually has nothing to do with the category at all. It's just something that's happening on the level of the fusion ring. So let me just point something out here. So X, I want you to think of as an anion. It's not a symmetry defect, not yet, but it lives in a G sector. And so if I take something Y in the H sector and I fuse them, it's going to live in the corresponding product sector. And we want to do this in a non-trivial way. The grading is said to be faithful. And you can always organize the fusion rules of your anions using a group in this way. It's called the universal grading group. It's the largest group that you can do this with for a given theory. It might be trivial, as we'll see an example of in a moment. But we're going to be interested in cases where there's some content there to that grading. I should mention, because we're working with anions, right, we can braid them. So we have a commutative fusion ring in particular. And what that means is that the grading is always necessarily by an abelian group. But I'm going to use G anyway for reasons that may become clear later. Any questions about the notion of a grading? I'm about to show you some examples, so maybe I will just carry on for just a moment. Okay, so when I talk to mathematicians and I say easing, they get mad, but everyone else has been saying it. So I think I'll just say, instead of easing, so I'm just gonna say easing. That's how I was raised, incorrectly, I guess. So our easing anions, they have these fusion rules. There's a Z2 grading here. So, okay, our category, it breaks down into two pieces. One that looks like SVEC, that has our vacuum anion and our fermion, and then we have our easing anion in the non-trivial graded component, right? If I take sigma times sigma, I land back in the trivial sector. So it's respecting that Z2 grading, okay? Whereas with Fibonacci, I can't do that. You try to put a grading on this, it just won't work. So this isn't the kind of theory we're gonna be able to play around with, but there will be plenty of other interesting theories that do have interesting gradings. We'll see in a moment that we're going to be in business when this trivially graded component has some abelian anions in it, just like with this example. So we'll return to it in just a moment. And again, I'm just talking about a fusion ring. Let me give you one more example, everybody's favorite, I guess. Toric code, topological order. So we have four anions. They have Klein 4 group fusion rules. The universal grading group is the Klein 4 group. So we can put everything in its own graded component. But we'll see an example in a few slides where we actually want to use a non-universal grading and have a fermion lying around in the trivial component to play around with. I should mention that the universal grading group, when you use this in this construction, it has really nice properties, but I'm going to be agnostic about the grading. So now I've gotten through the preliminaries, I'm gonna go ahead and tell you about this construction. So the idea is really simple. I'm gonna fix all of my anions, and I'm just gonna change their fusion rules in a very specific way. So I have my grading, and I need some abelian anions in the trivial sector. And what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna pick a 2 cocycle on my grading group valued in the abelian anions in that trivial sector. And I'm going to use that to define a new fusion rule. Because I've chosen a 2 cocycle, I definitely get a fusion ring out of this. Note that the grading is preserved, so I'm not messing with that structure that we've introduced. But I might be changing the duals. So the rank is preserved here. The labels are preserved. We can still refer to them in the same way, but their duality might have changed in this specific way. So this gives me a new fusion rule, but is this a consistent anion theory? Can I still, you know, do I still have pentagon equations being satisfied? Do I still have a meaningful braiding and self-statistics? That's what the rest of the theory deals with. So once you define this new fusion rule, you just ask whether it categorifies with the appropriate structure that we want in order to interpret it as a topological order. So this has very much a flavor of obstruction theory, and you'll see some of the quantities that show up probably look pretty similar to other cohomologically flavored obstruction theories that we see in this subject. And that's not exactly a coincidence. There's a connection there, and maybe at the end I'll get to it. So we were just changing the fusion rules. Rank's the same, anions are the same, but I want to show what this looks like in pictures, right? I took the time to emphasize this other way of thinking about the anions with these other pictures, and I want to show you how all of these local pictures transform. So before, remember, I had strict associators. I was sort of trivializing, in some sense, what's the most meaningful part of these theories to us. And now I need to build a new associator. And so if I take an anion in the G1 component and Y in the G2 graded component and I fuse them, I need to tack on this abelian anion that depends on those gradings. And so when I do this fusion product on the left, a threefold fusion product on the left versus the right, these lambdas show up in a different order. And so if I'm going to build a consistent associator, I'm going to need to glue up this picture and in particular introduce or use the braiding of my theory here. So I need to be able to braid that abelian anion past everything else in the theory, at least in one direction. And then I'm going to need some way to identify on the level of objects and isomorphism between the lambdas that I've indicated here. So I've used the braiding in order to build this isomorphism. I want it to satisfy pentagon axioms, and so I get some condition that, you know, looks pentagonal in some way. There's 3 things over here, 2 things over there, but I've used a braiding. And it's the braiding on the abelian anions that shows up, and we saw that in the last talk. I'm suppressing notation here. I'll often leave off the lambdas of 2 arguments and the nus of the 3 arguments. Just ask me if that gets confusing. Where I wanted to make a comment here was, say I just started with something fusion and I wanted to play this kind of game. If I don't have a braiding lying around to use, then what I can do is try to pick a 2 cocycle valued in what's called the relative centralizer of the trivial component in the theory. And then I can at least half braid things, half braid my abelian anions past things. And then you do get a new fusion category. So there is a notion of just zesting fusion categories. So you could ask, all right, I've got a construction on fusion categories. What happens when I stick that thing into a Levin-Wen model? What does it look like? Or you know, your favorite sort of lattice construction. And that's a good question. Probably, right, I'm interested in what it looks like in full Gori generality. You can certainly do lots of examples. The easiest one is you take VEC G, fusion category. Don't pick any, don't change the fusion rules at all. Just pick a 3 cocycle. That's, everyone knows here knows how to do that. That's a very easy case of this construction on fusion categories. And more generally, though, you get some arbitrary fusion category and you do this. I would love to know, okay, compare the Hamiltonians before and after. What can I say about the ground states? And that's a problem for a physics student, and not me, not today. So I'm going to assume that I started with a topological order to begin with for the rest of the talk. Question?
Quick one.
Go ahead.
Is this lambda of two group elements, is it a simple object or?
It's an anion. It's an invertible simple object. Yeah. Carolyn?
Is there a simple example of when you have VEC G, but the zesting isn't associated with changing the?
Yeah, great question. So if I pick an arbitrary 3 cochain that fails to be a 3 cocycle, well, then there's some 4 cocycle that measures the obstruction, and that's an anomaly, depending on your definition, that you can try to make some sense of. But it's a bit of a digression from where I want to go. But the answer is yes. I'm going to be talking about like when you choose this data and it satisfies these nice conditions and you get something, but it's actually kind of interesting what happens when it doesn't satisfy the conditions. There's still some content there to explore. Theo, is there a question?
So I'm just trying to track, like, is this equation you've written down, is it some piece of a more, will mu and lambda and maybe something else compile into some single cohomology class somewhere?
Let me just say yes for now. Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to talk about it that way in this talk because I think it's a little complicated to describe exactly the cohomology. But
yeah. So let's say, like physically, I want to think of the zesting operation as kind of attaching an anion to the trivalent vertex. So that would be like a dimension zero defects. And then, but here, if I define a new associator, that seems I need to go to like dimension minus one to attach those nus.
I really want to stick to the world of topological order here without getting into the fusion categorical symmetry. So I think maybe in a few slides I might say something that addresses your question, but let's go back to that at the end. And then maybe one more question I saw before we move on. Yeah.
So is the total quantum dimension?
Sorry?
Is the total quantum dimension always preserved?
Great question. Yeah. If I start with something unitary, yes. But if I want to be more general, it might change in a very subtle way. But let's just say yes. Okay, one more.
Yes. So in VEC G, is it any 3 cocycles allowed? So?
Yeah, this doesn't deserve any special name. Just, yeah, you're introducing a 3 cocycle, changing the
associated. Is it all the fusion categories with G fusion rules?
Yeah. Okay. When we have a fusion category, we don't just have a monoidal structure. We also have duals, right? Our anions have dual antiparticles, dual quasiparticles. So again, I just want to go back to this, like, let's just look at pictures. That's all we're going to need to understand what I want to talk about. Before, I had, you know, creation and annihilation. And now I have new pictures in my new theory that represent the same process, taking into account the fact that the duality has changed. So I'm doing something slightly strange. I'm writing the pictures in the new theory in terms of the old theory and this data that I've introduced. But let's just be really boneheaded about it. I had cups and caps, and now they look like this, okay? And I want them to satisfy the appropriate axiom, so I get some notion of isotopy and variance. And that's a constraint that I'm just going to enforce. We want to be able to braid our anions. So if it looked like this before, now because I've changed the fusion rule, I need a way to identify lambda of G1, G2 with lambda of G2, G1. And so I need to introduce some data that does this. And of course, it needs to satisfy the right axioms. So these are your, you know, analogs of the hexagon axioms that you need to get a braiding. This construction, again, it's sort of more general than topological order, but I just want to assume that I start with something non-degenerate and it stays that way. And if I use the universal grading, that's always true. But we'll see examples in a moment we care about where we're not using the universal grading. So I'm just going to assume that that's true. There's one point I want to make here. No, I'll wait. We have self-statistics, we want to zest this, we introduce some degree of freedom, we ask that it satisfies the right properties in order to give us consistent anion theory out. Okay, and if we make all of these choices, then you can prove that if you start with maybe a more general pre-modular fusion category, or for us to say we start with a topological order, we pick this data satisfying the right conditions, then we get another topological order out, okay? We want to interpret this in terms of a construction on topological order, so that's where I'm going to stay. Here's just a summary of all the pictures I showed. The exact content's not super important, just we had old pictures, we have new pictures. A point I want to make is that we're doing this like twisting or this discrete deformation of our theory using abelian anions and isomorphisms thereof. And so this has a very concrete flavor, even though it doesn't look like it the way I'm telling this story. All of these isomorphisms that I've introduced are really just numbers, a collection of numbers that I can keep track of. And even when you're working abstractly, that's how we think about them. So pretty pictures and a bunch of numbers satisfying some equations, the way we like to think about things usually. Okay. That's the point I wanted to make here, which is, you know, say I want to go and look for zesting data on the computer without necessarily needing the full data of the theory to start with. I can go and I can look for solutions to these equations as long as I know what my abelian anions are, the two cocycle I'm choosing the fusion rules with, and how those abelian anions braid with one another. And maybe it's worth noting that there are sort of inherently finitely many choices involved in this formulation. Okay, up to equivalence. All right, so now I want to show you some examples because I spent plenty of time thinking about or showing you theory here. So let's take our Ising anions. Sometimes we give specific anions with Ising fusion rules names, like SU2LVO2. I'm just going to call them all Ising. There's 8 unitary modular categorifications of these fusion rules, and there's some data I can pick that realizes all 8 of them if I start with one of them. So there's a lot going on here, but maybe the picture is just if I start with one of these Ising anions, I can get all the rest, all of the other anion models with the same fusion rules. And the way I can tell is by looking at the twists of the Ising anions, and I'll see that I get all of them. So this is 1/2 of the 16-fold way. So again, this also has a connection to minimal modular extensions of SVEC, but I'm not going to explore that any further here. Another example that's using a non-universal grading, if I start with Z4 anions, its universal grading group is cyclic group of order 4, but if I use a cyclic group of order 2, then I can generate, maybe I also need to allow myself to reverse braidings or complex conjugate, but I can get all of the other abelian theories of rank 4. So that's the other half of the 16-fold way. So I can't get between the examples on the previous page and here. They're different rank. Those were rank 3. This is rank 4. But those two halves of the 16-fold way are all connected by this construction. So this is just a different way to think about things, you know, you already understand really well. These are, you know, maybe the previous slides were examples we know well. Something that I think is interesting is that this construction is also capable of producing modular isotopes. So these are topological orders with the same modular data, but that are not actually equivalent. So there's some way to distinguish them with some experiment. So the smallest ones we know about, they're just twisted quantum doubles, nothing fancy, but the smallest in the family is like ring 49. So maybe these are much, much bigger than you would ever actually care about. But they do exist, and maybe they're interesting in the abstract from a classification point of view. And these can be realized by just zesting the untwisted quantum double. And the group is some non-abelian group. The details don't really matter, but this is an example that's slightly interesting. And also, right, we start with a quantum double model. We get a quantum double model out. Yeah.
So I just want to know if I understood your theorem. Is your theorem that this specific example can be engineered from
something? The whole family.
The whole can be.
Oh, sorry. That's not true, yeah. I'm just talking about G for this specific G. Yeah.
So it's not true that if I had like two different quantum doubles for the same group,
No, I naively guessed that would be true, and someone immediately pointed out a counterexample to me. So it's, I can tell you later. Yeah, I would love to find a nice characterization of the relationship between zesting the fusion category in the way that I just introduced a few slides ago and taking the Drittenfeld center, but don't have it yet. Okay. All right. And just to show you something a little funkier, because the last example I showed you, you take a twisted quantum double, you get another twisted quantum double. Okay, maybe it's a bizarre one. But you can also get a bizarro quantum group topological order. So you can start with something like SU3 level 3, you can zest it, and you get something that's definitely different that doesn't come from a quantum group. So that's interesting because, I'm not saying, right, it does come from a quantum group. It comes from zesting a quantum group. But it's now we have a new way to rule out, like, oh, what's interesting, what's an exotic topological order? Well, we now understand how to produce some of these modular data and modular categories that we didn't before. And this isn't a unique example. There's, you know, some things that happen at SU2, E6 level 3, SO12 level 2, where you start with something of this form and you get something else. So there's some interesting things going on here. Exactly what is maybe what I'd like to talk about next. Okay. So how should we think about what this construction is doing? I just gave you a bunch of examples, but they had a bit of a different flavor. So you can look at a braid of your anions or a topological quantum circuit if you want to be cute about it. And you can zest it. So you can take those pictures I showed you, and you can just glue them in. So I replace the braid with the new zested braid picture. If I'm going to do that braid on different strands, I may need to introduce an associator where it was previously trivial. So old picture, new picture. But you can. This is an example. And more generally, you can observe that this implies that the braid group representations are projectively preserved. And what that means is that the exchange statistics are projectively preserved, by which I mean the braid group representations. You can ask about, okay, what do we really care about? Usually it's the mutual statistics and self statistics. How do those change? We have formulas for those in terms of the original modular data and the zesting data. I'll point out something slightly subtle about this in just a moment, but what's interesting is that this is just a special case of, you know, you might be interested in more general invariants, and they have this really nice property that they factorize. So, okay, the braid group representations were the same in some sense. If you take one of these links and you zest it, it factorizes, it splits into a product of your original invariant and then some new piece that depends only on the zesting data. And you can see that by taking the highlighted bit and sliding it out from the right. And with work in progress with Calvin McPhail-Snyder, we show that you can compute this invariant that depends on the zesting data in polynomial time, which is not obvious. So what that means is, you know, give me a black box oracle to compute the thing on the left, the invariant on the left, I can compute the thing on the right in polynomial time in the number of crossings in the diagram. So that's some way of saying, okay, these two quantum invariants differ by something classical. So they're the same in some sense. Okay. When we look at mutual statistics, we usually conjugate one. We usually use the dual particle. So that's why this expression doesn't appear to factorize. But it does happen if you just keep the labels sort of abstract. So
is classical invariants in examples, they're rich or they're poor?
Oh, like what are they?
Yeah.
So they come from combinatorial topology. I think they're one way to think about them is that they're G-RAC cocycle invariants. But I don't know in terms of like how much content I can tell you about how they perform like as invariants or if they are closely related to any other classically flavored invariants. But they're very combinatorial. Yeah. A rack is like a quandl, but a little weaker. Okay. So these last results I've showed you, you can sort of take together to think, okay, even though there might be some interesting examples of topological order produced from this construction, a lot of the properties are essentially preserved or controlled in a nice way. And so you might guess that if you have these different measures of quantum computational complexity, that they're preserved or controlled by this construction. And that's exactly the kinds of question that I'm interested in. So other things you might answer are, okay, well, I have mapping class group representations, right? The S and the T, they generate a representation of the modular group SL2Z. How are those related? Because the orders of twists can change, so there is something sort of non-trivial going on. I expect it to be controlled by abelian anions in some way, but it's a little tough to pin down, at least at the moment. And then you also have invariance of closed three manifolds, right? We've been sort of sticking with the condensed matter point of view, but we know we really have a TQFT that gives us three manifold invariance. And I expect those to, in the same way that these link invariants differed by a polynomial time algorithm, differ with respect to something that depends only on things that are hard about classical three-manifold topology and not condensed matter physics. So that's my guess is that there's some fixed parameter tractable algorithm here, but this is just a guess, and I, you know, hopefully figure this out. Maybe I'll just say now, why is this? Why are these good questions to ask? Well, one of the things that we're interested in is understanding gauging from a similar point of view. We talk about gauging symmetries of topological order like we understand it really well, and certainly there are people that understand it much, much better than I do. And we have lots of examples that we understand, but it's not something we know how to construct in general. And what kinds of properties it have. These are the kinds of questions you would love to have answers for gauging. And so these give you maybe these same things won't be true, but it might give you some idea of how you should approach these kinds of questions if you've answered them for a construction that's much, much simpler. And I'll maybe say a bit more about that at the end.
Can I have a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
How does the chiral central charge change under this thing?
Yeah, good question. So you can just give me a specific theory and a specific ZestingI can just compute for you the new central charge. It is not one of these. And I think it's more closely related to something about the boundary of a four manifold or something. So it doesn't behave as I don't know what to say. You can definitely compute it in any example you give me, but I don't have anything intelligent to say about it right now.
Okay. Could you go from something with C minus equaling 0 to C minus equal not 0? Just as a simple.
Yeah. So you can, and the, which examples did I show? The bit class is different. Question back there?
I believe in your 16-fold weight paper, you said that Zestingcan change the chiral central charge by 1/2. Is that for the specific example or in the general examples there is also such kind of?
Well, I don't think that was my paper. That would be really great if it was. But yeah, what you said was known quite a while ago before this construction was fleshed out, like in this level of detail. So yeah, the central charge can change.
So for general topological order of magnitude vesting, is there also a change of one or two, like, or a similar unit in the chiral central charge?
Let me just say I don't know, but I think you can get something quite general. Maybe one thing I want to say, but I won't show, is that, of course, you know, we do care about having concrete data for our topological order. And if I had such data, I can cook up data for the Zested theory. And I've got some work planned with Gerrit Verklein that we're really excited about, sort of putting this to use and have some ideas for applications. But from this point of view, it's just a derivation. So. And I claim that it would be difficult, if not impossible, at least for me, to answer those kinds of questions and prove them rigorously, just from formulas for example, the Zested F symbols, which are really disgusting, by the way. Yeah.
So we have one question on.
Okay.
Sound should work.
Hello? Can I ask a question?
Hi.
I wonder whether Zesting and this so-called abelian anion condensation are related.
Yeah.
In a sense, what charge only changed by integer, or this the quantum dimension do not change under Zesting?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have these two properties?
Yeah, so I think you've pointed this out before and observed that there's some connection here to the hierarchy construction, right? That's what you have in mind? Doing a stacking,
yes.
And then a condensation? Yeah. We're hoping to pin that down. I think, I'm not sure exactly what the precise statement is at the moment, but there's definitely something there.
Can this thing changing central charge by some non-integer value? That's one question.
I think that's maybe what someone just asked, and I don't want to answer that right now. Because I don't know off the top of my head.
Another thing is that whether Zesting can change in quantum dimension, whether quantum dimension can preserve under Zesting.
So if you start with something unitary, then all of the quantum dimensions are preserved. But if you're more general, it might change by like a sign.
Oh, I
see. That's it.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. So I guess I have time to talk a little bit about symmetry-enriched topological order, which is more general, but we'll see actually somehow easier and already sort of fully understood by many people. So I'm doing something slightly annoying, which is I'm going to reuse C. Before it was a modular fusion category, it was a topological order. Now it's symmetry-enriched. And again, disclaimer, that's going to be synonymous with bosonic and G-crossed braided extensions of modular fusion categories. So I'll say briefly what those are in a very sketchy way, analogous to how I reminded you about how I wanted you to think about topological order. But that's the point of view that I'm taking here. And again, you can ask about fermionic, and most of the things I say should be true. What's going to be slightly different? We start with our SET order, and I'm going to pick some Zesting data. It's going to look very similar on the level of the fusion category part. I'm going to pick some 2-cocycle, but now it's going to have action. I'm going to pick some 3-cochain or some isomorphism, but now there's going to be an action laying around. So it's really similar story to what I just told you, except now there's an action. Maybe before I flash what the categorical structures are that I will draw pictures in, let me just remind you of what some examples of these are, because I think we saw a few maybe in Fiona's talk. So these come from a topological order and a what at least we used to call global categorical symmetry with vanishing obstruction. So and I'll remind you of the mathematical content of that statement in just a moment. But these come from having some symmetry of your topological order. And if it's lifts to a high enough level, if it's categorical enough, then some obstructions vanish and you can form the extension theory. There is actually a symmetry in rich topological order where that symmetry action extends and the symmetry on the anions is sort of carried by defects. So things like Tambari-Yamagami fusion categories, which I think are probably pretty familiar to most people, are examples of Z2 crossed braided fusion categories. And when A is odd order, these give you examples of SCT phases that are extensions of abelian anion theories by particle hole symmetry. So I'm being kind of sketchy here, but you have a Z2 action that just inverts the group operation that the anions obey. You're grading, you have your abelian things, you have your non-abelian defect now that's fixed by the action that extends to the whole G-cross braided category. And then I drew some little pictures for the crossed braiding. We have really bad conventions here because we needed them in our paper. So these are contrary to what you'll find in the physics literature. So I apologize about that. But you see other examples of these things, right? Oops, there was supposed to be a 2 here, right? Electromagnetic duality symmetry in the toric code is another example. So our any bilayer topological order has a layer exchange symmetry that you can extend by. So these are other things we're interested in sort of the zoo of topological order, and they also have this nice mathematical model. These G-cross braided fusion categories that we're going to sort of conflate with symmetry and rich topological order are very similar to the G-graded modular fusion categories we were just talking about. We still have a G-grading. So before I was like, don't think of these labels. Don't look at this and think symmetry defect. Now you can think symmetry defect. So now this XG is a defect that lives in the G sector, and there's a crossed braiding that uses the symmetry action in general. So mathematically, we have a fusion category. It's graded. There's an action on it. So for every group element, there's some symmetry that gets picked out, and it satisfies coherences. And instead of a braiding, we have a crossed braiding that uses the action. And instead of hexagons being satisfied, you get crossed hexagons being satisfied. So I'm going to be really sketchy about this, but we're interested in examples of these where the trivial component is modular, in which case we can interpret this as a symmetry-enriched topological order. So I mentioned that the cohomologically flavored parameters in obstruction theory were sort of not an accident. And let me remind you that of the sort of mathematical theory that governs, okay, when we have a symmetry of a topological order, when can we gauge? That's the same theory as when you can form a symmetry in rich topological order purely in 2+1D. And what you need there is to have a homomorphism from your symmetry group into the Brouwer-Picard group of the category in the trivial component to lift to a monoidal two-functor. I've stated this in a slightly weird way, but that's fine. So these are known to have a cohomological classification. And so this two cocycle that shows up in Ettinghoff, Nikšić, and Ostrich, and the three cocycle that shows up, these are very closely related to what we're about to see, but also to the first part, because what you're really doing when you zest is you're keeping the trivial component fixed. You're keeping all of the bimodules over the trivial component fixed as categories, but then you're changing how those modules fuse with each other. So it feels like a very similar thing. And so this is also my attempt to fit this into the theme of the conference, which is, okay, there's some fusion of module categories going on here, so we know there's something too categorical going on. But sort of the point of zesting is that this is a very low-brow techniques for something that maybe is secretly higher categorical and can be described more elegantly. But this point of view we can do computations with, and we can prove some nice physical theorems. So again, we had old pictures. We've got new pictures. They actually look exactly the same, except now there's a G braiding used in order to build a new category of defects, and there's some actions floating around. I really don't want to say anything more than just we had old pictures, we have new pictures, just like before. We are changing the fusion rules of the defect in exactly the same way. Yeah?
Lambda's lambda from the previous slide, or lambda's lambda from half an hour?
Thank you. Yeah, I kind of glossed over this, so and did some things out of order. So I really appreciate the question. This is not the same lambda as earlier. This is now a two cocycle with G action.
So it is the lambda in the anion expansion given, or is it different lambda from
the It's the same, yeah. And I hopefully in a moment I will state that in a way that looks kosher.
And the thing you just called omega is now new, right?
Or is omega equal to new, or is omega?
No.
Okay.
Yes. So there is sort of, we call it a classification, but what I'm showing you is like, if you have a base point of the torsor's worth of extensions, how I can generate all of the other extensions, which are classified by this. But I'm telling you how to get there. So the data looks slightly different, but they're, yeah. One moment, and I'll at least state the theorem the way we stated it in our paper. And so if it's wrong, it's not just my fault. Okay. So again, we had old pictures, we have new pictures. What's nice about this version is if I pick this two cocycle with action, I'm just changing the fusion rules of the defect in a pretty straightforward way. I make sure that I still have a fusion category. It's actually automatically G cross braided. There's just a natural way to zest the G action. And I can draw pictures. So I have a new zested G symmetry. The higher data of that symmetry, the tensorators and compositors of the action, you can compute, meaning I can draw you new pictures for. And similarly, my new defect braiding, there's a new picture to go along with it. Okay, but yeah, there are nice pictures, but this is not something new. Okay, so any two extensions with the same underlying group homomorphism. So maybe let's just say the same sort of permutation symmetry on anions and defects are related by this zesting that I'm telling you about. So I don't want to spend too much time on this. This is maybe just for people that know extension theory really well. I don't want to claim that we've discovered something new. We've recovered something that's already been known for quite a while. So you can generate all of the different extensions, symmetry enriched topological orders extending a given one using this construction. And this is more of a claim. I haven't gotten around to this yet. Although Aysen, Bonderson, and Knapp did this, I think, for some fermionic SCT order. They sort of observed that you could do this with zesting. And beat us to the punch a bit with that and did something along these lines. So you can look at that. So again, if you want to use this to actually zest concrete data, you can. But the point is this should just be a derivation from the theory. And I want to be fair, because I'm pretty sure this was well known to experts that this would work as expected. Okay. And mathematically, so forget about the topological order for a second. I told you about things you could do to braided fusion categories and G cross braided fusion categories, and they're related in a nice way. So one way you can interpret what's going on with zesting braided fusion categories is in terms of this well-known extension theory that's already established. So every braided fusion category is just trivially a G cross braided thing, because I started with something G graded to begin with. So I can think about it as having trivial symmetry. Then I can change the extension class, or in a moment, I'll sort of show physics interpretation, changing the symmetry fractionalization class. And then that's all you're doing. But then if you trivialize the action, this diagram commutes, so up to equivalence. So you get your zesting. So this more general framework, even though we don't recover anything new, it does give us an alternative way to understand this construction as being related to extension theory. So there's maybe a hypothesis required to make this go through. I saw a question maybe a moment ago. No? Okay. So the next thing I'm going to show you is this only works in some very limited assumptions, and I'm slightly concerned that the hypotheses are mutually exclusive. So this may have no content, but this would be nice if it was true. So, and it has to do with the various conditions that you require to be satisfied to make these machines turn. But if I have topological order that has a G grading, I can think of it as having and it has a local G symmetry, then there should be a way to think about it as a trivial SET order, change the symmetry fractionalization class using zesting, and then forget it. And that's what's going on with zesting. That's not necessarily like a helpful way of thinking about it, but in certain cases, it's maybe a way to interpret and tie these two constructions together. But let me maybe just to sort of end with some remarks. So this really is a nice tool to have in your toolkit if you're interested in classifying fusion rings. It actually has been used to help classify fusion rings at low rank, fusion categories as well, and of course modular fusion categories and hence topological order. So we saw a few examples where it was meaningful to be able to interpret things using this construction. And we saw that it's also connected to extension theory and hence gauging, right? So when we gauge a symmetry, there's two steps. I'm talking about gauging symmetry in the context of topological order. We extend and then we equivariantize. And the obstructions to gauging are these obstructions to forming the extension. So there's a relationship here that zesting is a piece of this gauging story that at least now we understand fairly well. And this last remark is more philosophical, but again, you know, what we'd really like are to be able to prove exactly what happens to topological order when we gauge. What happens to the anions, the statistics, all of the interesting mathematical invariants and representations that I mentioned earlier. We'd love to understand that for gauging, but that's really hard because the topological order can change pretty drastically. But we can understand it for something much more similar, which is a piece of this story. And so maybe it will help us understand what kinds of answers to these questions we're expecting. And I will stop there.
Are there any further questions?
In the back, yeah.
Is this zesting story related to the obstruction theory in a precise manner, since you have teased about it?
Yeah. So if you pick zesting data for the G crossed braided,
that is established in the ELO paper, I believe.
Yeah, exactly.
For the not G crossed.
For the not G crossed. There's a theory of extensions of braided symmetric fusion categories by modular fusion categories. And there's an extension theory that I think Nick Schitch understands really well, and that would be the way to make this precise. But I don't have anything to say more precisely right now. But yeah. Yeah. Theo, wait, go ahead. Yeah.
So I have a question about the Fibonacci category example.
Sure.
So because of the trivial grading, there's no zesting. So I guess in that case, the Galois conjugation has a transitive action on all the categories with that fusion rule.
Yeah, I think there are two of them. Two unitary ones, right?
Yeah.
Two. Yeah,
yeah. So does Galois conjugation plus zesting give some transitive action in general?
That's a good question. I think that this story is much nicer if you let yourself also use Galois conjugation whenever you feel like it. And it's a little more efficient, like if you're trying to build a path between two categories.
Yeah.
You mentioned sort of as an offhand comment that zesting can move you between modular and pre-modular categories. Can you say a little bit more about that?
That zesting can...
It can ruin
modularity, yeah.
How badly do you... Can you tell us anything about this?
We have a statement of how the Mueger Center can change under zesting. But it's... I don't have a nice way to explain what happens, but if it only happens when you use a non-universal grading, which a lot of the times we do want to use the universal one, so I haven't spent too much time thinking about it. But yeah, it's something sort of interesting that can happen, that you can break modularity or recover it somehow. So you can always invert this and go the other way.
So. Yeah, assuming that you preserve modularity under some conditions, is it obvious or not obvious that about the width classes of the two categories? Are they in the same class or can be different?
It can be different, yeah.
Can I unzest?
Yeah. This is in the paper with Julia Plovnik and Sung Kim, so... there's always you have to be a little careful what you mean by unzesting, but there's always some zesting data you can pick that'll undo the one that you started with, and if you sort of compose these things, you should, up to equivalence, get back to what you started with, so, yeah.
Okay, there are no further questions. Let's thank you, Rebecca.